Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of October. In just a moment, another in our series of health care programs, and it couldn't be more timely with the Senate Finance Committee passing a health care reform plan yesterday. Now we have five separate bills from the Senate and the House. Everything goes to closed door negotiations, and we'll see what emerges next week or in the next couple weeks. We've been on this story for a long, long time, and we are so happy to have presented these programs to you and been delighted by your response. This is listener-supported, as you know, Wisconsin Public Radio. Our fall membership drive is going on right now. Listener donations, the foundation of our budget, and that's why I am asking for your gift right now. Online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Joining me in the studio, we have the whole gang with us today. Rob Schroeder is here. Rhonda Fanning. Good morning, Rob. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen. We have a dollar-for-dollar match right now up to $2,000. This generous challenge is offered by existing members, and it's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today. So your pledge right now will be doubled. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to Helen Halpin about healthcare reform. And as you know, these kinds of discussions, and we've had so many of them on healthcare reform, are possible because of your financial support. Give now, please, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. A very special gift for those who pledge this hour. When people ask for book recommendations, I've been recommending this. He's a marvelous author and writer. The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. James Marone is the co-author. And the last time we spoke with him, which was last week, he said that this is the book that President Obama is reading now and has been reading at Camp David. So if you want to really know health care and the history of it since Harry Truman, marvelous book, really getting rave reviews, $150 pledge, and we'll send you a copy of this book.
That's right, and giving is simple, whether you give online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. We just need your name, contact information, and how much you would like to give and how you want to pay. You can use a credit card if you can. It saves us time and money. And don't worry, we don't share any of your personal information with any other organizations. Again, give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
On Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network, you hear substantial topics. We don't patronize you by assuming that all you can handle is a headline. We know you want more than that. So please make your donation in support of the programming that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And just a reminder, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000 in effect right now. So we have two things going on, the book for $150 pledge, Heart of Power, and this special money that we'll get. So every dollar you give, existing members will donate an additional dollar. Hey, double the buying power of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And our goal this hour is 25 pledges, so please give now at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
And we thank you very much. Once again, a reminder that your $150 pledge will get you a copy of Heart of Power, which you'll know more about healthcare. You'll be the hit of any kind of conversation that you're going to have until this healthcare reform is settled, which may be some time from now. It's really a very, very good book. And a regular guest of ours as well wrote the book. So once again, donate now.
A big thank you to those of you who already have donated, and if you're still thinking about it, please do it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, Rob and Rhonda. Appreciate it, all the work that you do. And we just want to remind you that we've done a whole series on healthcare. For those of you who have listened to us, we've been on this story for a long, long time. Starting in July, we looked at universal health insurance. We've talked about healthcare in Canada, healthcare in France, health benefits enjoyed by federal employees, healthcare in the Caribbean. Do you remember that? That was a wonderful hour with a guest from the University of the West Indies in Barbados. We've looked at the health and House and Senate healthcare bills, healthcare reform in the insurance industry with Wendell Potter, access to healthcare around the world, reform through the years. We had our Frederick Healthcare Forum. We had a two-hour forum with people from all aspects of this debate, a remote broadcast. We've looked at healthcare in Finland, where people called in and spoke Finnish, no less, only on public radio, and universal healthcare in San Francisco. So our series will continue. One of our regular guests has been Helen Halpin. She really knows this issue so thoroughly, more than almost anybody I know. Professor of Health Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Big news yesterday from the Senate Finance Committee, so our on-air lines are open for you as well. And that number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Professor Helen Halpin, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you here during a pledge drive, no less, because you really know this issue. So now we get this thing from the Senate Finance Committee. My understanding is that we've got five different bills, and all of them are going to be negotiated behind closed doors?
Well, yeah, it's a two-step process, or maybe more than that, depending upon how you count from here on out. First, the bills in the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Bill, needs to be reconciled with the Senate Finance Bill, and they're quite different in a number of ways. I mean, they share a lot of similarities, but there are some tough issues that are going to be hammered out, and then that bill will go for a vote on the Senate floor. And in the House, there are three different bills, which are a little bit more similar than the two in the Senate. And Nancy Pelosi is going to have to put those together and then put those to a vote on the floor of the House. She said this morning, I think she wants to do that before Thanksgiving. Once each chamber has voted on a semi-final bill, those two bills, the Senate bill and the House bill, go into what's called a conference committee. And the Democratic leadership will get together from both the House and the Senate and reconcile the Senate bill with the House bill. They merge those two into one bill, and then that final bill goes back to each chamber for a final vote, and if it's passed by both chambers, it then goes to the president's desk. So there's lots more room for negotiation here, mm-hmm. and we're nowhere near the finish line, although I must point out that we are closer than we've ever been in history, now having all of the key committees report out about.
So something will happen. We just don't know how big it's going to be.
Right, and we don't know. It's very interesting, I think, to watch what's happening right now with the insurance industry. The reality is that four of these five bills do call for the creation of a new government public program, what people are referring to as the public option. The Senate Finance Bill is the only one that does not. And yesterday, the insurance industry launched a major attack, both releasing a report that showed that under the Finance Bill, people's premiums would go up, and also launching a major campaign to scare the elderly that they're going to lose coverage under Medicare. I think it's interesting because they've actually made the case for the need for the public option stronger than anyone else has been able to do. Because without a public option, there's no way to keep their prices down. And so by saying, you know, your rates are going to go up and we can raise the rates as high as we want, I think they have played what may be the last card and convinced many that the public option is the only way to get them to rein in costs.
You know what I don't understand, and I keep thinking this and asking the question, Helen. The polls still show that an overwhelming majority of Americans want a public option in this plan.
Yes.
And I don't understand why it's not something that would be voted on overwhelmingly by our representatives in Congress. Is this lobby so extraordinarily powerful, and they give so much money linked to reelection, that they're the ones who are ruling here?
Well, I think that's a very good hypothesis. I don't know if you watched Bill Moyers recently had another special on this, and he basically feels that our democracy is broken right now, that the corporate interests are so powerful. They believe there are six insurance industry lobbyists for every member of Congress.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, there's just no way that consumer groups or, you know, public interest groups can compete with those kinds of resources and the kind of money that they are throwing at the Congress every single day. It's really disconcerting. I think the only glimmer that I saw yesterday in the voting was that, in fact, Olympia Snowe of Maine, who is a Republican, did vote for the finance bill. And this also suggests that perhaps Susan Collins will be voting for whatever bill comes to the floor of the Senate. Now is the time more than any for people who want to see a public option in the final bill to contact their legislatures, particularly if you have a congressman or a senator who's considered a blue dog, a more conservative Republican. Those are the folks that need to hear from their constituents loud and clear, because I do believe that when the vote comes to the floor, even Max Baucus, who voted against both the amendments for the public option and the Senate finance bill, will vote for a bill with a public option. He's basically said as much, because when he went back to his district in, I believe it's Montana, he heard without any doubt that the people of Montana want a public option. So I do think there's an opportunity, particularly now, for the voice of the people to be heard and put pressure. If those folks want to get reelected, they need to act on the will of the people.
And what about Olympia Snow? First of all, a lot was made of her vote to make it a, quote, bipartisan bill. Her personal story is extremely compelling, and I understand fully why this is an important issue to her. Are we making too much of her vote, and would she be at all likely to vote for a public option?
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. If all they have to vote on is a public option, she's going to have to decide whether she wants health care reform or not. The Republicans haven't offered an alternative. So the final bill will be the final bill. And my sense is that her constituents will want her to vote for health care reform. She may have to swallow hard to vote for a public option, but that's where the rubber meets the road, when that final reconciled bill that comes out of the conference committee goes to the floor of each chamber, and it's time to put up or shut up. They're going to have to vote up or down one way or the other. And I think that is the point where constituent pressure will be the most effective.
Mm-hmm. Do you read this as I do, Helen, that her personal story and the way she conducts herself puts her in some ways beyond the insurance lobbyist? She has phenomenal support among the people who voted for her in Maine.
Right.
And, you know, the personal story is just compelling.
Well, it is. And as she said, you know, history calls. And
yes,
this seems to be the point in our history where we are finally tackling this issue and have the political will, both of the White House and the Congress, to do something. And so, you know, you either get on the train at that point or you don't. And I think she's made the decision that this is the time and she wants to be a part of it. She certainly has had a huge influence on Senate finance and what is or is not in that bill. But I really do think that her influence diminishes substantially from here on out.
And let me ask you, is it fairly meaningless reform, as some have suggested, without a public option?
Well, I see that it would be very, very difficult to achieve the goals that the president has outlined for this reform without a public option. I just don't know how we keep the insurance companies honest. And one of the most troubling things about the Senate finance bill is that it wouldn't even put in regulations in place requiring insurance companies to take anyone who wants coverage and to stop using pre-existing conditions to exclude people and to hike up their premiums and to not cover certain benefits until 2013. So nothing would change till 2013 in terms of the insurance industry's behavior.
Yeah.
And there would be nothing to stop them from increasing their premiums even faster than they have been.
Helen Halpin is our guest, frequent guest here, as we've been talking about health care reform for many months, and we will continue to do so. Now it's all getting pretty interesting as we're getting down to the time when something will develop. We have five different bills, as Helen was saying. Senate Finance Committee passing a bill without a public option, the only of the bills that does not have a public option. So what happens from here? And, of course, the big question we ask you, our listeners, is what do you want? What do you want? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we do want to remind you that we're in our fall pledge drive. I only have a couple days left to ask for your support. We have a stupendous premium for you this hour. If you can pledge to us, we want to send you a copy of The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office by James Marone, who has been with us several times, and David Blumenthal. This is the definitive work on healthcare reform and how presidents have dealt with this issue from Harry Truman to Barack Obama. It's really a good read, and word is that the president has been reading this book as well. So that pledge number is 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn, to you in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Helen Halpin, our guest, professor of health policy at the University of California, Berkeley, extremely knowledgeable. I am serious about all five of the bills that are on the table now. Jean Marie from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Jean Marie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is an issue that's really close to the heart in our family. I have multiple sclerosis and have COBRA insurance after a divorce that ends next August. I'm concerned that with the health care reform that's in front of us now, that a lot of people aren't aware of what the real issues are. And one of those with this current bill that's pending is that the health insurance reforms don't go into effect until 2013. I don't think most people know exactly what kind of effect this has on families like ours, where, you know, the cost of medication alone for MS is close to $2,000 a month. I'd like to know what the college or what the guest thinks about the possibility of any kind of actual and real reform happening anytime within the next year or two, and what the best ways for most of us are, other than contacting our legislatures, which I found to be pretty ineffective. What the best ways for us to get that information out there really is.
Well, in most of the bills, actually, the regulatory reforms would go in place very quickly. It's only in this most recent Senate finance bill that those regulations wouldn't go into effect until 2013. So that hopefully when the final bill is reconciled, it will put those insurance regulations into place immediately. So for people like you who are, you know, who your option for buying coverage that's protected under a large employer group under COBRA will be able to still get insurance, and you won't be locked out because of your MS. One thing I think that you could make clear to your legislators is that you want the insurance regulations that they have to take all comers, that they can't use pre-existing conditions to exclude people or charge you more, that those go into effect immediately.
So let me get this clear. I'm confused still. If there is a public option, if they work it out.
This has nothing to do with the public option.
Oh, it doesn't. So come next.
This is a part of the bill that would regulate the practice of the insurance industry so they can't deny anybody coverage for any reason. They can't exclude coverage of certain things because of pre-existing conditions. And so that you'd have to get the standard benefit package and they'd have to offer you coverage and they can't charge you more for a pre-existing condition. And there's broad agreement on this. Again, I think the insurance industry influence was strongest in the Senate Finance Committee bill, and that bill reflects their influence, which is why the regulations don't go into effect till much later than the other bills in that one. But so I guess my point to this listener is to make sure that her representatives hear loud and clear that she needs those regulations to go into effect immediately, regardless of whatever else is done.
But won't she still have a problem, Helen, in paying for it?
Well, if these regulations are put in place, they will not be allowed to charge her more because she has a pre-existing condition.
Thanks, Jean Marie, very much for the call. Wayne is next from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Kathleen.
Hey,
good
Wayne.
Morning.
Hi. We can't hear you very well, Wayne. Just speak up.
Oh, okay. My question to your guest. Can you hear me, Kathleen?
We can, Wayne, but do you have the radio on?
No.
Huh. I don't know what the problem is. Just go right ahead with your comment. We can hear you.
It's not on, Kathleen.
Okay. Just go ahead.
Okay, quick question to your guest, and thank you for taking my call, Kathleen. Now, I am concerned a little bit. I have a mother who's on Medicare, and bless her heart, she still has all her faculties and understands quite well what's happening. But I happened to hear on GMA this morning, George Stephanopoulos made a statement that they have to find ways of getting the hundreds of millions of billions of dollars they're going to need to finance this health care reform legislation through cuts in Medicare. And your guest obviously is very bright on this topic. Where does she think the hundreds of billions of dollars in cuts in Medicare would come from? Would it come from reduced care, rationed care? What is her
this
opinion?
This is probably one of the biggest misunderstandings out there. And believe me, the insurance industry is capitalizing on this misunderstanding right now. There are certain costs that are being paid presently to private health plans in particular under what's called Medicare Advantage. About 20% or 10 million of the elderly get their Medicare benefits through a private health maintenance organization or preferred provider organization, a private managed care plan. And right now, and for the last several years, the federal government has been paying these private plans 14% more in premiums than it's actually costing them to take care of the Medicare population. So these plans are presently making a 14% profit off of every Medicare beneficiary who signs up with them. And most of this savings that we're talking about is going to come from cutting that out. The federal government should not be a profit center for private health insurance. So what will happen is Medicare will change the premium amount they pay to those plans so that it meets the cost of taking care of the Medicare people but doesn't provide them with a profit, so that there should be no cuts in the care that Medicare receives. What will be cut is the profits of the private health insurance plans. Is that clear?
Mm. Well, that really helped a lot, and I really thank you for that, Kathleen.
Thank you, Wayne.
Yeah, I wanted to say you're my favorite hostess on public radio.
Thank you, Wayne.
You're like a hostess cupcake, and it's got that creamy stuff inside. I just love them.
Oh, I haven't had one of those in years. Maybe we'll celebrate pledge with getting one of them. I used to eat those in college all the time. I'm sure they're terrible for you, but what the heck, every now and then. Thanks, Wayne, very much for your call. See, isn't it interesting how all of this is being presented? Because you just presented, and I think that most people are thinking, oh, Medicare, it's in trouble. They're going to take all this money from it. And you gave a very straightforward, and you're the woman who knows this issue, explanation of what it is. It's amazing to me that we're getting all these other conversations. Where are they coming from? So people believe something else.
Well, I mean, it's classic strategy.
Right.
Scare people, scare them to death.
Yeah.
So that they don't want it. Make them afraid of any change. And it's just basically dishonest. It's misleading. I think the problem is, and I've seen this over and over again, and I think you're different in that you really try to seek out experts who can try to explain things. But most of the time, the press just sort of parrots what the industry or representatives from the industry are saying without questioning them, without digging further into finding out whether the statements that they make are really true. And so these things take on a life of their own without anyone really fact-checking them or trying to provide an explanation. Now, understandably, many times the explanations associated with these things are very complicated and get into details that most people either aren't interested or might not understand. And so it's very difficult once one of these scare tactics gets out there to correct it or get ahead of it, because the truth is kind of boring compared to the rumor.
Right. And the truth is so crucial, actually. Do you think, as you talked about the industry ramping up its opposition to all of this, that considering the fact that we're closer than we have been for a long, long time in achieving reform, that we're entering a phase you ain't seen nothing yet from what we're going to see from them?
I believe so.
Really?
But I'm hoping that the industry has been discredited enough that people will take some of these scare tactics with a grain of salt. What worries me is an elderly population that might be shut in and doesn't have a lot of contact with friends or family, who watches this on the television and is scared. And there's, it's very difficult, I think, to reach that person with the other side of the story. And so I do worry that the elderly are very vulnerable to this kind of scare tactic in a way that perhaps the rest of the population is not. And they have chronic conditions. They're totally dependent on their medical care. It is life or death for them. And so so I feel like the industry takes advantage of that vulnerability in targeting these scare tactics at them.
Helen Halpin is our guest. We're talking about, well, we've talked about it for months now, but as the Senate Finance Committee passed their bill yesterday, and there are five bills out there dealing with health care reform, and now it's going to be fascinating to see how they're all reconciled and what powers emerge and how the health care industry, insurance companies particularly, take this on, the ads that we're going to see, et cetera, because now we're down to the finish line on this issue, I think, or down to some kind of finish line. Helen Halpin is with us, and we'll take more of your phone calls. Our lines are filled, so we'll be with you in a moment. We are in our fall pledge drive, and as a regular listener to this program, you know that you're going to hear something worthwhile. There couldn't be anything more worthwhile than what you're hearing right now. It affects all of us in a very profound way. It's a matter of life and death in many ways. So we're asking you to put a value on the program dealing with life and death, if you can do that. Joining us in our studio, Rob Schroeder and Rhonda Fanning. Hello, Rob. Hello, Rhonda.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hello, Kathleen. Your contribution is vital to Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is our most important source of income, so please support this program and everything that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio by making a gift in any amount. Give online at WPR.org or call toll-free 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match this hour, Kathleen. Very exciting. Up to $2,000. This generous challenge is offered by existing members. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. So this hour, your pledge will be doubled. You give 100, it turns into 100 and, or 200. Did the math. 150 will get you a copy of the book this hour, so that'll turn into $300, your pledge, right now. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the book is, we've done a lot of reading, as you know, on healthcare, and we've talked about healthcare. This is a terrific book. It's The Heart of Power by James Marone, who's joined us several times, and David Blumenthal, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. It is the book that President Obama has been reading during the times he's able to get to Camp David, and it looks at healthcare reform in this country since the time of Harry Truman. It's a great read. It's a very important read. This is a very important subject that we've been trying to deal with as we should, often and with depth. So please pledge, 888-202-2552.
After paying bills, we understand it might not be easy to find anything extra. That's why it's up to you how much you want to give. Any donation makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. How much you give is not as important as the fact that you give. Giving to WPR is a choice, and because it's something you value, you'll probably find that choosing to donate is enjoyable. Find out right now by going online, WPR.org, or calling 888-202-2552.
We hope it's not the most fun you have all day today, but it could be fun, right?
The most fun is listening to Kathleen Dunn.
Yeah, right.
Or eating that Hostess cupcake, one of the two.
Or having a brownie. Lisa brought in brownies today, too. Okay.
Are we talking about health care? And you guys
know
about.
Sorry, life is, you know, juxtapositions and contradictions and all of that. At any rate, you can listen to WPR every day for years. You'll never get a bill. We don't count how many minutes you listen, and many of you listen a lot, I know. We count on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening that you do. You decide how much you would like to pledge. I know some of you can't pledge very much money. We understand that these times are not very difficult. We have had people pledge a huge amount of money to this program. Maybe you can do a dollar a week or $2, a dollar a day. Please decide. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And thanks to everyone who's already pledged. If you haven't yet, you can still go online to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thanks to both of you, excuse me, for all the work you do. Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder. Helen Halpin is our guest, and we have tons of phone calls coming in because we're reaching a finish line, perhaps, when it comes to what kind of health care reform we're going to have in this country. We go to Brad next from Culver. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. Yeah, Medicare only pays 80% of your medical bill, and the beneficiaries have to purchase an expensive Medicare supplement, a.k.a. a Medigap plan from an insurance company, to take care of the other 20%. And I asked my congressman to introduce an amendment to the health care bills calling for Medicare to pay the entire bill or to prevent the Medicare supplements from denying people enrollment at any time due to disability or pre-existing conditions. If seniors could switch to a cheaper company outside of open enrollment, this would save each senior a couple thousand dollars per year. Does the professor Halpin know if the bills in Congress will remove underwriting from enrollment into Medicare supplements?
I am not aware of the fact that they will or not. I honestly don't know. There are some provisions in these bills for improving the Medicare benefit package, particularly with adding no cost sharing for any preventive care and shoring up the Medicare prescription drug benefit and getting rid of the donut hole. The Medicare supplemental policies that you referred to are very highly regulated, and there is, I do believe there is an open enrollment period every year, and that prevents people from switching when they get sick, there has to be some stability when you've got a marketplace like this. So I doubt that they will allow people to change outside the open enrollment period. And I honestly don't know enough about what the underwriting practices are allowed under those supplemental policies, although I do know that 96%, I believe, of the elderly who have Medicare Part A also have a supplemental policy to cover the things that aren't covered. Honestly, those policies are relatively affordable compared to what the working population faces in the individual market because they are so highly regulated. But I think you're onto something important, and I would urge you to continue to push it.
Yeah. Thanks, Brad, for the call. Tony is our next caller. Hi, Tony.
Yes, hi. I actually have more of a comment and a question. We actually vote members of our Congress into office. But the problem is that it doesn't seem like that they put our needs first, and it seems that when voting time comes around, we seem to vote for the lesser of two evils. So why do we vote for them? I mean, if they don't, this health bill is a prime example, everybody has good intentions when they first run for office, but, due to campaign contributions from certain companies, all of a sudden the constituents' ideas fall by the wayside. When we actually have the power to vote these people into power, let's just not vote.
You're right, but I think what's interesting is when you really have to hold their feet to the fire is in the primaries, because that's where your vote will really make a difference, whether they actually get on the ballot or not. And so if you have a Democratic representative who's not representing you, the biggest threat to them is for the party in your district to put up another candidate to run against them who will better represent your interests. And I think if Congress knows that people in the party are serious about particularly this issue, and that if they don't vote for the bill that you want, you will not reelect them in the next primary, and they will not be on the ballot and even have a chance to earn your vote. That's how our democracy works. That's the system that we've set up. And unfortunately, in the past, we haven't seen, I think, the kind of serious challenges against incumbents. And we all know how difficult it is to challenge an incumbent. But it seems to me with this issue with health care, we have an opportunity in the next cycle to really hold up a big sign and let everyone know who did or did not vote for the bill that had the elements that we wanted in it, and to hold them accountable at the ballot box. That's the only way it's going to work.
Let's talk about the president for a moment here. The book that we're giving as a premium for $150 pledge looks at the power and of the office and how presidents have dealt with this particular issue. What do you think Obama, does he need to let the American people know exactly what it is that he wants in a bill? Will he hold a lot of sway if he says, I won't accept anything if it doesn't have a public option?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, his personality is not one to give ultimatums.
Right.
That's just not his style. And I think he operates behind the scenes in a way that isn't visible to us. I think that we can all rest pretty comfortably with the knowledge that the proposal that he made during the campaign is the one that he would prefer. And I think that my understanding is that the White House will next have the greatest influence both in working with both chambers of Congress in deciding what bill they'll put for a floor vote, but even more importantly, in influencing the decisions that are made in that conference committee about what ultimately stays in and what's out in the final bill. And that will happen behind the scenes. I don't think we'll necessarily see much of that. But he is such a skillful negotiator. He usually gets what he wants. And I have no doubt that his influence will be significant, and the final bill will look a lot more like what he originally proposed than not.
And it will pass?
I believe so. I don't think they won't put. Listen, these guys aren't going to put a bill to the floors to vote unless they're really confident it will pass.
Mm-hmm. You know, you keep hearing
they can't afford a defeat on this.
No, they sure can't. You keep hearing from the TV news shows I watch at night, probably too many of them, but you keep hearing you only got 30 Democrats who would be in favor of a public option here. You got to have 60. It's just not going to happen. You're more likely to see something like the Senate Finance Committee bill.
Well, that's a possibility, but I think it'll be interesting to see. They really actually only need 50 if they put that part of the bill into the budget reconciliation.
Oh, yes, right.
And then Vice President Biden could break a tie. So, I mean, actually they only need 50. And you know what? My bet is that the Democratic Party is going to start to be twisting some arms pretty seriously very soon when it comes time to vote for these bills when they're on the floor. You know, it seems to me that the president and the Democratic Party, and he's the leader of the Democratic Party, are in a position to, you know, do some Lyndon Johnson, cut some deals, say, mm-hmm. if you want the support of the party in your next election, you need to vote for this bill.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of political bargaining and wrangling that always goes on at the end. I expect we'll see that, and my guess is that when it comes to voting for health care reform, if it does include a public option, they have to vote up or down. The Democrats will have 50 votes, but mm-hmm. we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Oh, Helen, I think you should just go to Washington now and report on all of this. You know, I want you to be there, don't you?
It would be exciting to be there, yes, but I feel like I can remain a little bit more objective by not being there.
Helen Halpin is our guest. We're talking health care reform once again on our program. We've been on this story for months now, and she's a marvelous guest. She really knows the inside out of all of the bills that are being considered now. Professor of Health Policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, and we'll take more phone calls momentarily here on the Ideas Network. Our fall pledge drive is continuing. Just a reminder, because only this hour will you, for a pledge of $150, be able to really delve into the history of healthcare reform with a book that is the premium. It's a wonderful book. I've read the whole thing, and the president is evidently reading this book if he's not already completed it. The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. David Blumenthal and James Marone are the authors. Most of you are going to pledge about $120. That's our average. If you can up it a little bit, then you'll get this book. And oh, will you be informed about the history of all of this? 888-202-2552 for your pledge. Let's go to Dave from Ellison Bay next. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. A lot's been said since I called in, but I'll start with a disclaimer. I do not work for the insurance industry. I am not a spokesperson for anyone but myself. And I hesitate to refer to Saturday Night Live as a resource or a voice of expertise, but I just watched last night their recent skit where they put the finger on President Obama and concerning his record of accomplishment since he's been in the White House. And for all those who are putting their trust in the president, I just refer to that skit. But on to the issue. Frankly, this is another program, another effort to supposedly deal with health care reform. And it's very frustrating because, you know, honestly, what's really being talked about is shifting the cost of paying for health care. Health reform or health care insurance, you know, health itself, they're all interrelated but separate issues. And health, how we pay for health care, as someone who does not have health care insurance, how we pay for it is only one of the things that's driving the cost of actual health care through the clouds. So, you know, let's be honest. What we're talking about is some kind of reform, supposed reform, on how the cost of health care is going to be put on the backs of everybody supposedly equally. Anyway, I'd like to say something else, and that's with respect to fear-mongering, which your guest has referred to. I've listened to this and other so-called debates for years. On this issue, there is fear-mongering enough to go around, no doubt from the insurance industry, from the actual healthcare industry, and from those who are wanting to put the, you know, wanting to change, you know, the whole payment system, left, those on the left and the right. So I think pointing at just the insurance industry and saying they're trying to whip up fear in people is disingenuous. So anyway, and then regarding cupcakes, somebody, Wayne, I think it was, mentioned cupcakes, and this is how I'll close. You know, we live in arguably the richest country in the world. And unfortunately, part of the consequence of that in 2009 is that we have extreme health problems because of excessive habits, eating habits, drinking habits, smoking habits, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not going to put it on one cupcake vendor, but let's be honest. You know, we live in a country where I think it's well over 50% of people are obese or overweight. And, you know, we're talking about shifting the cost of their health care, along with everyone else's, on the backs of more and more people. And, you know, frankly, I'll close with this. There is probably good reasons for people to fund public radio. But underwriting shows that, again, confuse the issue in this regard, to me, suggest that maybe people should put their money somewhere else. And I'll close with that.
Oh, Dave, I'm sorry, but if anybody has put effort into understanding healthcare reform, it is public radio and it is this show. We have done this issue. We did a 2-hour forum at Freightard on this issue. We've talked to people from the insurance agencies. We've talked to people from healthcare forums all over the country. I don't think you put the backs of a lack of understanding on public. I don't want to get my Irish up, but I guess I will on this issue, that we really have done our best to give you a really deep understanding of this issue, really, really deep. So, sorry. Helen?
Well, he said a lot of things, and, you know, the Saturday Night Live skit was very funny, but, I mean, the reality is Obama has not even been in office for 1 year yet, and the Congress has not even completed one legislative session yet, and I think it's really unfair to start this man that he hasn't done anything. He's actually done quite a bit. His support for health care reform has been fantastic, I think. You know, the Congress is moving forward as quickly as the Congress can, and I would hope that no one would take that skit too much to heart. We have to give this man a chance. He hasn't even been in office for 1 year, and the president is only one of the three branches of government. In terms of being disingenuous in pointing out the huge amount of money and the ad campaigns that the insurance industry is putting out, I don't think there's any disingenuous
about that. I think that those are just the facts. And they have very deep pockets, and it's very difficult for anyone to compete with them in that respect. And, you know, I heard a lot of cynicism in the caller, and I don't blame him for being frustrated. He said he didn't have any health care insurance.
I know. I feel for
him. So my heart goes out to him,
yeah.
And I hope that that whatever passes will hopefully provide comprehensive coverage to him at a cost that he can afford. And I would just second hear his point about the importance of lifestyle risk factors. I think Americans do not eat a very healthy diet. We eat way too much processed food with sugar, fat, and salt in it that has no nutritional value. We don't exercise enough, and too many of us still use tobacco products. So he's right on that. That would probably do more to improve our health, but the fact is, when people are sick, they do need, deserve, and I believe have a right to get care to make them better and whole again. And that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. And what's, you know, what my fear is that, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, people who don't have insurance, and by golly, they die because of it. And that is a crucial issue in this country. It's crucial that everybody be able to have some kind of health care. I don't think that's Republican or Democrat or insurance or not. That's just something that we
as
Americans should have. You got it.
Yeah. I mean, the craziness of the industry, I thought, was just so crystal clear this week when the 4-month-old breastfed baby was denied insurance because the industry thought that the baby was too fat.
Yeah, those stories just get you.
Oh, my God.
I know. We're out of time. We got a pledge now. I got my IR
up.
Thank you very much. Thanks,
okay,
Helen.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk to you again soon. She knows all these bills. She'll be another guest. Believe me, she's really good. So here we are in a pledge drive. We have done, I will praise us to high heaven for all we've done concerning health care. It's been an enormous amount. If you would agree, you would like to pledge to these kinds of programs, please, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Joining me again, Rhonda Fanning is here. Rob Schroeder is here. Thank you both once again for being with us. And hello to you.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
You know, we talked a couple days ago about WPR being kind of a window to the world, and I think that on this show we've done that with all the different countries we've covered with healthcare over the past months, and I mean, look, all the different regions of the world, and we're going to be continuing to cover other countries and other regions of the world, and it's just such an informative look at what can be such a confusing topic to really try to understand the context of it, I think, is so important. It's something that public radio can do better than almost any other form, I think.
And I know you love the show where people called and you were answering phones that day. Speaking Finnish on the air of all things.
It was overwhelming.
It was overwhelming. Well, if you have enjoyed all these shows, the number is 888-202-2552 for you to pledge.
Right. Yeah. We've got to speak to people all over the world. We started in Canada, and then we got to go to France, Finland, the Barbados. We had the wonderful gentleman from the University of the West Indies on back in August. So, because you value this kind of programming, because we have been all over the world with you to talk about healthcare, please donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's very easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time. A dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 or $100 a year, and all year long you'll benefit from this program and all of the WPR programs that you've come to love. Make your contribution online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552.
And maybe you found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows. I know for me, after the healthcare remote, it really got me thinking, seeing all the different players that we brought together. That's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view. You value what you hear on this network. Please pledge your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And let's mention the book for a pledge of
$150,
Kathleen, The Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office by David Blumenthal and James Marone.
Yes, it's a wonderful book. It's the whole history of healthcare from Harry Truman to Barack Obama. It's incredibly informative. The president is reading this book right now, according to the author of the book, and he would know what's going on. $150 pledge, and we're happy to send that to you. 888-202-2552 is what you ought to call, or WPR.org.
probably my favorite show of all shows probably is Prairie Home Companion. I really enjoy listening to it. Sometimes I'll even listen to it twice on the weekend. I'll turn it on Saturday. If it's a really good show with good music, I'll turn it back on again Sunday. It's my favorite because it has a good mix of music and stories and jokes and whatever. It makes me laugh, makes me listen. I'm John Treader from West Allis, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio. It's my source of entertainment and information.
Please call with your pledge, 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things you can do. With 3 minutes of your time, all we need is your name, contact info, how much you'd like to give, how you'd like to pay. You can pledge online or you can call. We'll keep all your personal info safe. Your gift right now, $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount feels right to you, that gift will become the stories and programs that keep you connected to your world. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And maybe you've only discovered Wisconsin Public Radio recently, or maybe you've been listening to WPR for years. I met both types on our Springfield trip recently. Some people who have been listening to years heard about the Lincoln trip, and they call up their friends who are Lincoln lovers and said that there's this WPR
trip.
And
we had a great trip.
Like, we're not, you know, haven't really tuned into WPR much, but I'm sure they're fans now. So if they're out there, maybe you're listening to WPR right now, and you want to know that Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-driven, not profit-driven. Our business is to inform and entertain you, provide the quality programs that you come to expect and enjoy on WPR. It is your station. So please pledge your support now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
$150 will send you the Heart of Power, Health and Politics in the Oval Office. Thank you both so much for
Thank
all
you.
The work that
Thank
you
do. Thank you.
Really is a good show, and I will say that we do health care like nobody does health care. It's just good. We've really added to our body of knowledge. Thanks to Rob Schroeder and Rhonda Fanning, Rhonda, for producing this hour, and thanks everybody for all of your pledges. Thank you so much. We'll continue our conversations on healthcare. This is the Ideas Network.